This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke to campaign staffers Monday and acknowledged the roller coaster of the last several weeks, but expressed confidence the day after President Joe Biden dropped out of this year's presidential race.
In the next 106 days, we have work to do. We have doors to knock on. We have people to talk to. We have phone calls to make. And we have an election to win.
Harris has publicly received the backing of more than two-thirds of the Democratic delegates she needs to become her party's nominee. Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance used his first solo campaign rallies Monday to throw fresh barbs at Vice President Kamala Harris a day after President Joe Biden threw the presidential election into upheaval by dropping out and endorsing his second-in-command to lead Democrats against former President Donald Trump. The Ohio senator campaigned at his former high school in Middletown before an evening stop in Virginia, two venues intended to play up his conservative populist appeal across the Rust Belt and small-town America that he said the Biden-Harris administration has forgotten. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington this week with a scheduled speech to Congress and meeting at the White House. VOA's Patsy Badakaswara.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu left to travel to another battlefield, this one political, as the U.S. presidential campaign is upended following President Joe Biden's decision not to run for a second term.
Regardless who the American people choose as their next president, Israel remains America's indispensable and strong ally in the Middle East.
But analysts say in the potential race for the White House, Netanyahu would prefer a Republican. Netanyahu has reportedly requested a meeting with former President Trump, who launched significant pro-Israel policies during his term. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
And this is VOA News. U.S. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle on Monday testified about the agency's failure to prevent the assassination attempt against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells us more.
The head of the United States Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, answering lawmakers' questions about the shooting for the first time, was blunt.
We failed.
Cheadle said a full report on the agency's failure to protect the former president would be released within 90 days. Lawmakers said that was unacceptable during an election season that has already proved to be contentious. Some called on her to resign. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
The fallout from a massive IT outage continues as businesses work to get their online systems back up and running after an infected software update from cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike wreaked havoc across the globe. VOA's Tina Trini.
How did a global IT outage of this scale happen in the first place? Vahid Bezadan, a computer science professor at the University of New Haven, says failures in quality control testing likely fueled the chaotic domino effect that followed the update.
Typically, when a new software patch or the software update comes in, at least in critical infrastructure, it's the policy of the IT department or the IT staff to first test out the update on an isolated machine. If everything goes according to the plan, they roll it out to other machines.
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
The EU's top diplomat says Hungary will not be allowed to host a strategic EU meeting next month. That's because of Prime Minister Viktor Orban's surprise self-proclaimed peace mission trips to Moscow and Beijing aimed at brokering an end to the war in Ukraine. EU partners overwhelmingly saw that as an undermining of their support for Kyiv. EU Foreign Affairs Chief Josep Borrell said the upcoming foreign and defense ministers meeting would take place in Brussels instead of Budapest. Hungary blasted that decision. Hungary currently holds the rotating EU presidency and had expected to host the annual late August gathering. Orban is close to Russia. An armed group has killed at least 26 villagers in central Mali near the border with Burkina Faso. A local official said Monday that the attack happened on Sunday as most of the victims were working on their farmlands. It is the latest in a series of violent attacks in the conflict-hit region where the Al-Qaeda-linked JNMI extremist group often targets villagers in the region in a similar manner. The armed violence across central and northern Mali has raged on for more than a decade. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vice President Kamala Harris touts President Biden's achievements.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served 2 terms in office.
South Africa presses to maintain its preferred trade status with the U.S. The chief of the U.S. Secret Service faces Congress over the failure to protect former President Donald Trump from an assassination attempt. Turbulence hits Zambia's anti-corruption commission. The Ugandan police and military take preemptive steps to prevent today's march on parliament.
Given the nature of mobilization and the organizational arrangement, we feel it is unsafe and we condemn it, so we are not going to give in to it.
And Nigeria collaborates with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden's Sunday decision to drop out of the presidential race sent shockwaves through the White House and beyond, leaving uncertainty about the Democratic nomination in its wake. The White House correspondent Anita Powell has the story.
What happens now in American politics after President Joe Biden's stunning Sunday withdrawal from the presidential race? By Monday morning, it seemed everyone had a theory. But first, some reflections on the past from the person now taking center stage. On Monday, Biden's presidential pick, Vice President Kamala Harris, made her first post-announcement appearance, hosting college athletes at a White House event. She said Biden, who is recovering from COVID-19 at his Delaware home and has not been seen publicly since last week, is recovering fast.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap. In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served 2 terms in office.
But Biden's Republican critics question whether he should remain president. Representative Mike Johnson is Speaker of the House.
If everyone acknowledges that he is capable of running a campaign,
supporters are more upbeat with top Democrats lining up behind Harris. Representative Adam Schiff is a California Democrat.
I have every confidence that she could beat Donald Trump, and I'm very excited about how quickly people are coming together to support her candidacy.
So what happens now? First, a disclaimer. Peter Loge is Associate Professor of Media and Public Affairs at George Washington University.
Research has found that political pundits are worse at predicting political outcomes than dart-throwing monkeys are. So I would take anything anybody like me says with several grains of salt.
Historians dismiss the idea that this stunning turn of events could cause instability. Thomas Schwartz is a history professor at Vanderbilt University.
I think the White House is a much larger machine than the president himself. And in effect, he is going to be a lame duck president. We've had lame duck presidents in the past, and that's not really an issue or not a terrible danger.
And some analysts say that, in a way, this makes the whole election simpler. William Galston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
There'll be a division of responsibilities. He'll be the president. Kamala Harris will be the candidate. And this makes it easier for both of them in a way, because each has a distinct job.
Which brings us to the biggest question of all. The one only American voters can answer in November. Who gets to live here for the next 4 years? Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
U.S. Secret Service Director Kimberly Chito faced calls to resign from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle on Monday as she testified about the agency's failure to prevent the assassination attempt against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on concerns about security during the upcoming election season.
9 days after the assassination attempt that shook the nation, there are few answers on how the shooter got so close to Trump.
He's on the roof!
The head of the United States Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, answering lawmakers' questions about the shooting for the first time, was blunt.
We failed.
Cheadle said a full report on the agency's failure to protect the former president would be released within 90 days. Lawmakers said that was unacceptable during an election season that has already proved to be contentious. Some called on her to resign. Republican Representative James Comer.
The Secret Service has a zero-fail mission, but it failed on July 13th and in the days leading up to the rally. The Secret Service has thousands of employees and a significant budget, but it has now become the face of incompetence.
Cheadle told lawmakers Trump's Secret Service detail was aware of a suspicious person before the former president spoke at the rally.
If the detail had been past information that there was a threat, the detail would never have brought the former president out onto stage.
One analyst told VOA the early warnings about the shooter raised serious questions. Dr. Scott White is director of the cybersecurity program at the George Washington University.
Most definitely, there was a failure here to neutralize the threat when it was immediately observed. And quite frankly, it would have been legitimate to shoot that young man once he was on the roof. It would have been a legitimate shooting, a legal shooting. So I don't know why there was hesitation.
Congressional Democrats called for changes to gun laws in the United States, saying it was unfortunate that former President Trump is now one of many victims of gun violence. Democratic Representative Jerry Connolly.
We almost lost a presidential candidate the other day. A 20-year-old had access to his father's AR-15 and got on top of a roof within 500 yards or feet of the podium. And I'm asking you, did the availability of that AR-15, which is replicated all across America, make your job harder or easier, and you're not willing to answer that question?
The Federal Bureau of Investigation has still not determined a motive for the actions of Thomas Matthew Crooks, the suspected shooter. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Some members of the U.S. Congress have called for South Africa to be excluded from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, also known as AGOA, a U.S. program that grants duty-free access to enormous U.S. market for many South African exports. Zahia Kassim reports from Johannesburg on South Africa's effort to remain eligible for the trade program and its evolving relationship with the United States.
Solmobile Ndamase remembers when U.S. President Bill Clinton came to Soweto in 1998. Ndamase, a fashion designer who created the iconic Madiba shirts worn by then South African President Nelson Mandela, got a last-minute request from Mandela's office.
They wanted to give something as a gesture and as a gift to President Bill Clinton. And then they called me, they said, listen, you need to do something. President Bill Clinton will be coming in. So I had to go to the house of late President Nelson Mandela then and deliver the shirt.
That was during a period of good relations between the U.S. and Africa as a whole, and the U.S. and South Africa in particular. In 2000, Clinton initiated the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, allowing duty-free access to the U.S. market for most agricultural and manufactured products from eligible African countries. But times have changed. As U.S. lawmakers consider whether to extend AGOA past its 2025 expiration date, there are calls in Washington to exclude South Africa due to its geopolitical stance on key issues, such as its refusal to condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine and calling Israel's actions in Gaza a genocide. Political analyst Daryl Glazer from the University of Witwatersrand says tension has existed between the United States and South Africa's longtime ruling African National Congress Party since 2000.
You know, there's always been a tension at the heart of ANC foreign policy between, on the one hand, a kind of a human rights focus and a desire to appear to the West as a human rights and democracy champion, and on the other side, what you might call anti-imperialism or anti-Western imperialism in particular, combined with a kind of a loyalty to the countries that supported South Africa during the anti-apartheid struggle.
Those countries include Soviet-era Russia. Despite the tension, South Africa will send a delegation to Washington to advocate for its continued participation in AGOA next month. According to U.S. Census Bureau data from 2020, South Africa has become America's largest trading partner in Africa with over $20 billion in two-way trade volume. Economist Davi Root says South Africa cannot afford to lose AGOA, given the country's high unemployment rate and slow economic growth. He thinks a new coalition government, the result of an inconclusive May elections, will help the country's cause.
I think what is important, what happened in South Africa the last couple of weeks, is South Africa now has a government of national unity. And that's the message that we need to send. Basically, it is a coalition between the ANC and the DA, a political party slightly to the right. We've got a government now that is not a left-leaning government. It's a government that is forming a coalition with a more business-friendly alliance partner in the form of the DA.
If its status in AGOA is revoked, South Africa can still trade with the United States, but it won't receive the preferential rates enjoyed by other African nations. Zaire Kassim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Some Ugandans say they will march to the country's parliament today, Tuesday, to express their displeasure over the government's handling of corruption. But law enforcement and President Yoweri Museveni have other plans. The police and the military surrounded the headquarters of Bobi Wine's National Unity Platform, or NUP, offices on Monday. Assistant Commissioner and police spokesperson Chituma Rusuke tells me that the police took preemptive steps to prevent any mobilization.
The plan of the police is that we are uncomfortable with the procession, and we have communicated to the organizers. We invited them for a meeting at police headquarters to discuss modalities and how to go about it. We had some disagreements, and we have advised them to devise more civil approaches, because we sense there is a likelihood of chaos.
In a way, are you trying to stop them from protesting or marching to the parliament, or you are trying to give them alternative routes?
Why we can't get them alternative routes? Because the nature of mobilization they make does not accommodate that kind of environment. When you look at their placards, they were calling people from all directions. It is not something small and organized and something that can be facilitated by security.
If I quite understand what you're saying, is the police saying there should be no march to parliament?
In the circumstances, given the nature of mobilization and the organizational arrangement, we feel it is unsafe and we condemn it. So we are not going to give in to it.
They say they have a constitutional right to protest.
Yeah, Bwana Abate, that constitutional right is what we want them to come and we participate in having it observed without disrupting the lives of other Ugandans, without disrupting the peace of other Ugandans, without bringing in situations of insecurity. And we are saying that right, we recognize it, but it is not absolute. It cannot be exercised in a total disregard of other people's rights.
I'm reading that the police and the soldiers, you have sealed off the headquarters of the NUP party, the opposition party. What is the connection between the protest and the opposition party?
We treated the National Unity Platform incident on its own merits. What happened was that they called for a press conference today. Now, the uniqueness about the conference this time around was they called every party member, they called every member of parliament who subscribes to NUP, councillors, pressure groups. The mobilization manner is similar to that of the procession scheduled for tomorrow. The numbers depict something unlikely to breach So it gives security room to draw suspicions that something is not adding up well.
I know that Uganda is a democratic country, and there's the freedom of movement, freedom of association, and the freedom to gather. Right now, it sounds to me the government or the police is trying to dictate to the opposition when and where they can meet.
Ndugubate, that's not exactly the point. We would not wish to be here, but these political actors are pushing us to a situation and in a corner where we find we have nothing left but to stick to the ground rules and ensure that the peace and the tranquility in the country is not disorganized, that we do not give room to anarchy or situations that can disrupt public order.
Chituma Rusuke is Uganda's assistant commissioner and police spokesperson. He was speaking with us from Kampala. Nigeria is collaborating with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency on the use of artificial intelligence to curb the flow of illicit drugs and arms into the West African nation. Controller General of the Nigerian Customs Service, Adewale Adeniyi, held talks recently in Washington with administration officials. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofor that the meeting is part of a determined effort to boost operations in the face of the growing sophistication of gangs.
Earlier in the week, I was in San Diego, where we were having the conference on the use of geospatial intelligence in customs operations. The integration and adoption of simple tools like AI, like geospatial intelligence in customs operations, also form the basis of my discussions with CBP. And I am already excited as in the days ahead, we are going to be reaping the benefits of this engagement.
The United States promised assistance to Nigerian Customs to help you develop your AI capabilities and also use AI to make your job easier and more effective.
Yes, a good way to start would be for us to share experience with them, to know what works and what does not. We are very conscious of the kind of a copy and paste approach. We are not at the same level of development. So what we're trying to do is to look at our needs. We do a dispassionate assessment of our needs before we know what to do. Basically, we are moving from generative AI to the realms of predictive AI. So we already have some elements of machine learning in our operations. So what we just need to do would be to take it a notch higher than where it is now. And we are finding what the CBP is doing as a useful lesson to guide our migration.
Recently, President Bola Tinubu talked about removing tariffs and importing huge amounts of food into Nigeria to crash the cost of food. How does this work? Is it anyone can just import food and there's no tariffs, or there's a modality as to how this is going to be carried out?
Mr. President, in his capacity as the Commander-in-Chief, has under the Nigeria Customs Service Act, is vested with the power to determine, to vary, to change the rate of applicable duty on anything imported into Nigeria. There are statutory provisions, exemptions, but then there are those he could also make through this kind of pronouncement, which is aimed at reducing food inflation in Nigeria. It is left for us to implement, and I can assure you that this will help to address the rising cost of food if we discount the duty that will be paid on these items.
There's a disturbing, almost alarming trend now, reports of arms importation through some ports, Lagos, Port Harcourt. What are you doing? Some say that this might worsen the security situation.
Well, the successes we have recorded is indicative of the fact that we're not resting in our oars. We're getting the right intelligence. We're working on those intelligence. We are improving our risk management system so that we are able to isolate those bad elements bringing in those merchandise of theft into Nigeria to ensure that we arrest them. So it's not just arms, weapons, ammunition and all of that. Dangerous drugs and narcotics into that mix, because criminals that are going to use arms needs to get high on drugs before they get into their nefarious activities. So it's all related. And that's part of the reasons why we're talking to an organization like CB to assist us in building a more robust risk management system, a cargo targeting system that can help us undertake a better analysis of incoming cargo into Nigeria.
Adewale Adeniyi is the Controller General of Nigeria Customs Service. He was speaking with viewers Tinodu Ofo in Washington, D.C. There has been turbulence recently in the Zambian Anti-Corruption Commission, also ACC. First, the Director General resigned. Then President Hakainde Hichilema fired the entire commission. Some Zambians have been speculating that the ACC boss did not resign but was fired. Also, President Hichilema reshuffled his cabinet. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitua tells me that the president has the right and the power to hire and fire his cabinet, but he does not have the power to fire members of the Anti-Corruption Commission.
First of all, according to the Constitution, the president has got powers to appoint, to hire and fire. He also has got powers to reshuffle his cabinet at any time as he deems it fit to execute his mandate. So the reshuffle is not anything strange. In fact, in terms of knowing President HH, if there was something wrong with any of the ministers, he would not have reshuffled them by way of swapping. He would have fired. So if he is moving one minister to another ministry, I think it is a question of realigning energy, realigning competencies so that, his team can play according to the vision he has for the country.
The former president, Edgar Lungu, has criticized President Hakainde Hichilema for the reshuffle, saying that it came a little too late. In the context of the whole anti-corruption commission dispute?
Well, I do not understand what he means to say it has come too late in the day, because none of the ministers who have been swapped is faced with an allegation of corruption. No one is faced with an allegation by the anti-corruption agencies or indeed by the citizens. Therefore, to indicate or assert that the reshuffle has come too late in the day, I think it cannot be substantiated, because the president can make changes to his cabinet at any given time, even with 2 months before the general election.
This is happening in the context of the Anti-Corruption Commission. First, the chair resigned, and then the entire commission, the president got rid of the commission. What is happening in the Anti-Corruption Commission?
Well, first of all, I have tremendous respect for the former chairman of the Anti-Corruption Commission. Firstly, he is an eminent lawyer and my elder brother at law, therefore, in that regard. His resignation maybe is what can be said to have come late in the day, given the occurrences within the Anti-Corruption Commission, where it had to take a commissioner to complain about the operations of the commission, meaning that the board that was charged the responsibility of giving policy direction to the commission had let down the nation. The president does not run the Anti-Corruption Commission. The executive does not run the Anti-Corruption Commission. The Anti-Corruption Commission is an autonomous body which is run independently and autonomously, and that is why even the Director General of the Anti-Corruption Commission cannot be fired by the President.
Cornelius Mwitwa is the Zambian Information Minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. And that's it for this Tuesday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.